by Paul, from the CD of the theater piece called Sleeping with the Light On.
And this is a piece that basically Jay and I produced in the studio out sort of working from material that we used to perform live. And the singer is Rindy Eckert, who wrote the text and is the star performer from Slow Fire. Wait. Actually, we're about to do the last performance of it, I think. So coming up in the Bay Area on June 1.
Is this the yearly memorial last performance?
No, we've never claimed to do the last performance before.
I see.
We've wondered.
We've
done the show. We've said, is this the last show? But that's gone on for years now.
Yeah.
Did we cue this up on a CD?
Yeah.
On CD1 here?
I think it's on CD1.
Well, then
if not, we'll tell them what it is afterwards.
Let's take it away. Good ending. So that was from Slow Fire.
Sleeping with the Light On.
And is this a recent? This is a recent CD, right? When did this come out?
I think I can't
explain why you're on the show together. Jake Lloyd and Paul Drescher are on the show together tonight. So I always say tonight because it's still so dark and it still seems like night, but it is this morning. So it is Friday morning, the 8th. So why are you both here?
I think we're here because we've spent a long last 10 years doing a lot of working together in lots of different ways. Sometimes co-composing stuff, and we'll play one of the pieces that we co-composed tonight sometime. And often just sort of helping one another with different aspects of making music. And or in the case of like this recording of Slow Fire, Jay and I co-produced the recording, and it really was a collaboration in the studio. And my group has played some of Jay's music, and Jay's been involved in doing sound design and live sound for performances that I've done. So our music has crossed paths and overlapped a lot. So it seems like that's why you must have asked us, because you asked us. Why did you ask us anyway?
I did. But I thought, that's true. I did ask you. I thought maybe I had said to Jay or said to one of you, come on, and you said, well, I'm working with Jay all the time. I felt perfect because I want both of you to come on anyway.
Yeah, well,
I remember
we're buddies.
I know. I remember one, I'm sure, sometimes when you do live things together and you run into snags and you overcome them, and that really cements the bond. And I remember one memorable.
Oh, are we going to talk about great screw-ups now?
Which one? Which one do you remember?
The one where everything went off. Where everything stopped.
Yeah, that was cool.
What happened? The whole power went off.
Power went off in Theater Arto completely, right at almost at the climax of Slow Fire.
In fact, the whole block went down.
The whole block went down and then came back up pretty quickly after that.
But that meant all the sampling was gone.
Well, there was no backup power supplies on the computer or on the samplers, stuff like that. So it meant reload. So Rindy started out with Rindy talking, then the drums came back on. And they did a duet drum solo and the voice. It took about a minute and a half
to
get the sound back up.
Kind of came creeping back
cranking
in.
Back
part
up.
By part.
It was so great.
I always get that one confused in my mind with one night at Theater Arto doing Slow Fire when some guy wandered in, a street person walked in off the street and kind of walked down right next to the stage, which in Arto isn't really a stage because it's just on the floor, clearly in view of the entire audience. And, he didn't actually do anything disruptive.
He started talking to Rindy.
Oh, did he?
Yeah.
Oh, he did do something disruptive. Definitely drew focus, as we say.
And he wandered off into the wings, and the lighting designer said, all right, time to go. He said, I want to go.
I've seen enough of this, huh? Well, if we could actually tell horror stories, if we limited ourselves to Slow Fire, we could probably tell them for a while. There was the very first performance, and Rindy fell on his radio mic and smashed it on the premiere and stood up to sing his first line, and it sounded like
a whisper?
Like robots dying.
No,
like horrible distortion.
That's like the kind of thing that you pay a lot of money to create the distortion for nowadays.
So what happened?
Oh,
I stopped the show after after about 5 minutes when I realized it wasn't going to get any better, and we were getting to the point in the show when the first part of the show, it's kind of like glossolalia, or it's not really text that matters. And but at a certain point, the text starts to matter when he stops being an infant.
And it kept being glossolalia.
Yeah, yeah, right. So we grabbed another radio mic and put it on him, and we lived to tell the tale.
Because we were live on national radio.
Oh, that's right.
Because it was the New Music America Festival. That was probably my most terrifying moment on stage. I'd stopped shows once or twice before, but this was the worst.
You know who loves that when shows get stopped? Blue Gene Tierney. He said that's when he really feels alive, when the whole show stops.
Yeah.
And start over, and, you know, he's got a wonderful attitude.
Well, we were just talking tonight about why theater is still so exciting, and part of it is the idea that at any point that could happen in any show, any actor could forget his lines. I mean, even in the slickest thing, and that's not a bad thing. That's part of why it.
No, that's why it's fun.
Why
and then you see
exciting.
How people come out of it and work around it and all the ad libs. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
right.
It is pretty interesting. Pretty hairy. You know, you can get gray overnight, white hair overnight or something.
Actually, each time it happens, though, I'm much more sanguine about it. That first time was, like, terrifying. And now, hey, we have to stop the show.
Well, yeah, when you don't die. I mean, when the worst thing happens, it's not the worst thing that could happen to you, but it's pretty close to the worst thing that can happen to you in the theater, you know, have to just stop and go, oh, geez, you know. But you survive it, you know, you realize, oh, well, you know.
I think that at that point, I read somewhere, regardless of the hair getting white and all that, that the aging process stops during those moments.
It stops?
Yeah, something like that.
Well, then I should be a lot younger looking than I am.
Well, I guess it's afterwards that you realize that. But, I mean, during the crisis, the adrenaline, you know, all that kind of stuff.
Oh, yes, the adrenaline.
But, you know... Jay named crack, you name, when I was thinking, if you don't die, you know, because first of all, Jay used to send people birthday cards and it would just say, it meant he loved them and he'd say, don't die. Do you still do that?
I haven't done it lately.
And he also, you were the one, I don't know when it was, but you were doing Lando this and, you know, and you named crack Don. When it was kind of funny. But as Don Joyce calls it, crack-a-don. I used to come on after Negative Land, you know, after Over the Edge.
Yeah.
And he'd say, and now stay tuned for crack-a-don. Anyway, we digress. So what shall we listen to? I think we explained why you're both on right now, didn't we?
Yeah. So I'll introduce Jay's next piece.
Okay. Great.
This is a piece called Lightfall. Which is a tape composition that Jay, I think, did on a commission from the Margaret Jenkins Dance Company. And I think it's now available. It's on the CD, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
Yeah, it's on a CD on the, how does he say it, Ineal?
Ineal.
Ineal.
What does that
Views
mean?
From Ineal the Perfect Records. City.
Is that dirty?
I don't think so. I don't think it's the opposite of audio. But you'd have to ask Steve Key, the producer of the CD, who did a fabulous job of it, I think.
But actually, I love this piece,
Eventually.
Lightfall. And I think it was a really nice dance, and it's a really strong piece of music. Done, I guess it's an 8-track piece. Most of the sound is acoustically altered sound, right?
Yeah, it's all the instruments. It was all done with sampling instruments.
Chainsaws? Call that instruments?
Yeah. Well, I think there's a house fly and an elevator motor in it, too. But
And a lot of coat hangers, I think, too.
And coat hangers, but I don't know if you'll recognize them or not. So it's actually quite old now.
It's also pre-sampling, I think, isn't it?
No.
There's
some sampling in this. Yeah.
I called you sampling mavens on my webpage. Sorry.
That's okay.
That's appropriate.
That's all right.
Okay. Let's give it a little listen. That was Lightfall by Jay Cloyd. And Paul Drescher and Jay Cloyd are in the studio with me, and they're just having this fabulous conversation, and I'm just sort of saying, well, you know, say it. Paul's asking Jay what all the different sounds are, and they're just jabbering away, and I'm saying, save it, tell, you know, this is really interesting. For one thing, you said that there was, towards the middle, there was a faucet in a bathroom in London.
Yeah, that kind
bathtub.
Of that kind of beautiful whistling sound was the leaky bathtub faucet in my friend Katie's house in London. So if you crank the CD up really loud, you can hear people like on the street and in the house talking and stuff. So it's a little, you know, nostalgic moment for me to listen to that one.
And then the very end, what were there, triangles or something?
Well, yeah, the bell-like part is a triangle, like an orchestral triangle sample slowed down, and then there's a kind of a buzzy sound that's a house fly, and there's the percussive thing that's playing the solo, I think, is the sound of an elevator motor that was chopped really short so you can't tell what it is, and then I think there's some electric bass in there too. Sampled electric bass.
When did you do that piece?
I don't know. What's it saying?
Like recently?
I think it was about 87, 88.
Yeah. That's like quite a while back now. Ancient technology. The stuff at the beginning that sounds like metal metallophones is actually a bunch of cheap like digital delays tuned up till they're feeding back and then rung by putting some sound into them. 1989.
A pretty sonorous chainsaw happening.
We call that the Drupad chainsaw.
Yeah. I studied chainsaw in India for a couple of years, and I don't really play anymore. But
so you were talking also about some of your old equipment and some of your old stuff with great nostalgia, and you still use it.
Well,
though,
a lot,
right?
You know, a lot of the way, just like Jay was talking about where the sounds come from. A lot of what you do with equipment is just sort of find out. You don't use it the way it's intended to be used. You sort of push it to its limits and explore all its nooks and crannies. And so, when you appreciate a piece of equipment, is usually when it can sort of do surprising things. And so, this was a period before a lot of digital signal processing got very inexpensive, or left over from that era, which was probably the mid-80s, were a couple of devices called Yamaha SPX-90 reverbs, you know, reverbs, digital delays, stuff like that. And at least a lot of the signal processing in this piece was done on that relatively simple piece of equipment.
So would you, if something works, would you still tend to use it, or would you just let it go?
Still use SPX-90, but you fall in love, you know, with new machines. If you're kind of a technomane, you know, you can develop serious crushes on new stuff.
He's in love at the moment.
Yeah, I have a new sampler. I have a Kurzweil sampler that's like my second significant other at this point. So. Yeah, I shouldn't say that. That sounds terrible.
So what if I've heard that you name your patch cords?
Every one of them.
True?
Yeah, all 300
of
them.
What are some of the names?
That is Pablo.
Eddie.
Yeah. Bettina.
Come on.
Luther.
Mm-hmm.
Luther's one of my favorite ones, in fact.
Why? What kind is it?
Well, it's just it's a quarter-inch to quarter-inch cable. It's just a standard phone plug.
It's a blue one.
It's been with me a long time.
Mm-hmm. Paul actually is one of the few people on the planet who has more patch cords now than he started out with. You know, I shouldn't say this about him because it's not really a good thing. But you know, most people think that everybody has a certain amount of patch cords, and that everybody in the world on the planet ends up with fewer of them than they started with.
Like
that's
socks?
Not true.
Like
socks. But they actually are going somewhere. You know.
And Paul gets them?
Yeah, Paul has a lot of people's patch cords. We're not sure how
I know, that happened to me today. I just got this job at University of California, Office of the President, or UCOP. Oh, it's not as good as it sounds. But anyway, I just go from desk to desk giving people their breaks, right? Receptionists, their breaks.
Think of the paper clips you could pick up.
Well, listen. I went to from the 18th floor, and then I went 21st floor, and I got a call from the 18th floor, and this guy was so irate. He said, Barbara, you've taken all my pens. It's like every time I get a pen, right, and throw it into my purse automatically. And I had these great pile of pens. I had like 4 pens in my purse in 5 minutes. I mean, it was frightening and exhilarating at the same time.
So you're one of those people, too.
Oh, definitely. Yeah. So, what shall we listen to?
You want to listen to Kuroshi?
Sure.
You want to tell us what that means?
Kuroshi is a Japanese word for a medical syndrome that is quite a bit more common there in Japan than it is here, evidently.
There's a variant here.
Is there?
Yeah, you kill your boss.
Yeah, we do it differently here.
Or you just go with the machine gun and kill randomly.
Right, yeah. Right.
Start with your boss and, you know, whatever.
But in Japan, it's much more civilized.
Right, in Kuroshi, it's just the word for the salarymen who work like 20 years without taking a break and are on overtime every day, and then one day they just keel over dead on the sidewalk of stress.
Oh, Mark Cottrell had that on his email for a while.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, Kuroshi. Yeah.
So this is a piece I wrote for the performing group Basso Bongo, and this is a studio version of it, actually. This isn't Basso Bongo because it's too new and I don't have a tape of them doing it yet, but it's their bass percussion duet, Robert Black and Amy Knowles, and it's a piece for...
Join us for Cover to Cover, KPFA's weekday radio.
Whoops. Well, had my 3 fingers, 1 finger over. Do you ever do that on the piano or the keyboard? Well, I just did it on the board here. See, it's my three little fingers for our 3 mics. Anyway, well, I guess you had to be there, even if you were there. That was a very, very cool piece. So you're working that up live for the ensemble?
Yeah, well, we performed it. We went. The ensemble went to Indonesia last September? Yeah, September. September, October, we were there for... We did 2 shows in Jakarta, 1 show in Bali, believe it or not. We played Bali. And we did... Well, we played it each night there. But I played it on electric guitar, harmonized down, and Jay and I weren't very satisfied with the sound of that. So I'll be playing it on bass this time when we do a home season show here on May 31st. That we didn't say what the piece was. That was Kuroshi by Jay Coit, and so the Paul Drescher Ensemble will be doing a show on May 31st. We'll play that with Amy, actually the musician who it was written for, and I'll be playing the part that was written for Robert Black, which is he's an upright bassist, but I'll be playing it on electric bass.
So where is that going to be?
That's going to be at the Center for the Arts at Yerba Buena.
Oh, great.
Gardens.
It's a great venue. Excellent place. So very, very cool. I like that. So you said it's hard?
Yeah, it's kind of virtuoso piece. It was easier on guitar because there were 2 extra strings to play high on. On the bass, you have to go a lot further up in the neck.
To move more.
Yeah.
It sort of sounds perky to be Kuroshi.
Yeah, well, it's kind of a cheerful death by stress. Yeah, it's like it's not really a problem. And I actually wrote that because Robert Black and Amy Knowles. I listened to the demo tape for their duo, and it was very serious 20th century kind of, you know, difficult listening music. And I didn't think it. I didn't think it suited their somewhat brash and ebullient personalities. Uh-huh. So I wanted to write something sort of obnoxious for them. So.
And anyway, that's all Jay can write. So.
Yeah, that's my after the fact explanation.
Lightfall is the exception. I think. Jay thinks that's too pretty.
Yeah.
Stormy weather. I like the stormy weather.
Oh, that's a great one,
isn't it? Yeah. So, did you bring it? No.
Yeah, I brought it. It's not queued up, but I think
we can hear it later.
Get to it.
Yeah. Yeah, we can get to it at some point. So, cheerful and not cheerful. Well, sometimes it is cheerful thinking that if there's no way out, you could die. I was swimming my laps today, and usually it makes me more, as I swim, I get happier and happier, but this time as I was swimming, I was getting more and more depressed because I realized I'm just never going to have any money and it's going to get worse. So I thought, well, I could just kill myself on my birthday. And I was thinking, who should get my journals? Because my paintings are so gorgeous. And I was thinking of how people are going to really be crying at my funeral. And I got really cheerful about that. You know when you get really cheerful about how people are really going to miss mm-hmm. you and all that. And mm-hmm. say what a great artist you were. And they didn't appreciate you enough. But, you know. So then I got cheerful again. So that I guess that's reminding me of
this. And so now you don't have to kill yourself.
Well, not this year, maybe. But, you know, it's the upbeat notion of...
Well,
a dignified
you have to
death.
Have the option, right? If you don't have the option, then you're in trouble.
That's right. So, with that little homily, you know, you're listening to KPFA, KPFB in Berkeley, KFCF in Fresno. This is Crackle Dawn. I'm Barb. Paul Drescher, Jay Cloyte, who have been collaborating in many ways over the last 10 years, are here live. So we will take call-ins fairly soon, probably after 1 o'clock. But if you want to phone while the music is on, you know, and talk to either Jay or Paul, you're welcome to dial up 510-848-4425. So you've got a lot of options to meet the composer, so to speak. So, and I'm not even wearing my nightgown tonight. Sometimes I wear my, it's such a late hour that sometimes I have my nightgown
on. That can be taken in a few different ways.
Yeah. Put that nightgown back on.
Then I get dressed and, you know, and I was talking to Walter, the custodian. Kenneth actually was the guest and I was wearing a sweater and some tights and so forth. And I got warm and I just flung the sweater off and then I looked down and I was wearing my nightgown. It was ridiculous. I don't know how I digressed. I'm really sorry. So moving right along, what do we have up next?
Well, we could play this piece called Age of Unrest, actually, which is another piece written for the Margaret Jenkins Dance Company. I've worked with them a lot of times, and this was maybe like the second or third piece I think I did with them, which was done around 1991. In fact, I think it premiered like a couple nights after the Gulf War started. I remember doing our dress rehearsal, breaking our dress rehearsal so we could hear about where we got glued to the TV set and the CNN and watching the decimation of...
I know. Smart bombs.
Yeah. Oof. But it wasn't really reflected so much in the music because the music was already written. But this is just the tape of that.
Okay, on the
top. It's a quartet with Miguel Frasconi. Gene Refkin, Miguel Frasconi playing keyboard, sample, toy piano, and a lot of the samples are Miguel playing glass instruments because he plays a lot of like glass harmonica type instruments. A very unusual bassist who I've never worked with since, who's moved to the East Coast, named Perry Hall, a very young guy who was a wonderfully and has a great repertory of electric bass sounds, and I'm playing guitar and sampler.
Okay, and that's on the Ardat one?
Yeah.
What's the name again?
Age of Unrest.
So that was one half of Age of Unrest by Paul Drescher.
Yep.
Cool. There were Brazilian bird samples in there? I believe.
There was so many different things, but for a while there, Jay and I were sort of trading samples, and I know that the drummer, Gene Refkin, had a kit that had a mixture of a lot of different sounds, and some of them were birds that, I guess you had been on tour with Kronos, and you came back with some tapes or sound effects records.
We went to Rio, and I found a bunch of, I think it was the Echoes of Green Hell series of sound effects record by a guy who had like his, I mean, he didn't just have one out. It was like, you know, 8 or 10 of these things of him out in the rainforest. And with pictures of him on the cover, like in a rowboat with like a big shotgun mic, you know, with headphones on and stuff. So there was a whole set of those that we both used for a bunch of stuff. And
so did you just buy them all, of course?
I bought as many as I could get my hands on at that time, yeah. And then we used those. And then you had some great house construction samples.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, I'd done a lot of sampling of a house. Actually, some houses being torn down and some houses being built. And that was also a major part of the percussion kit, which actually we'll hear a lot of those samples later in the program. We'll play this piece that we collaboratively composed. It's called Secret House. But this piece came afterwards, and there were some vestigial samples still left over in the sampler's memory. Just happened to get used.
It's like blue in the face after smoke. I remember when years ago for At the Corner of Alive and Jesus, Paul gave me, I needed some wild animal sound. So you had just been on safari. So I got some lions mating from Paul.
That's a classic, yeah.
From you, yeah. And lots of birds. I still have the cassette. It's a beautiful cassette called Birds for Barbara. You know, just a whole bunch of birds that you would sample.
Yeah, actually, my favorite sounds were we had recorded these sounds of a bird. We were staying in a hotel compound in Nairobi, outside the center of town, and it was essentially an enclosed courtyard, and they had a very large tree that was netted, and at every morning at around 5 a.m. the birds would just start singing wildly, and if you take that tape and if you made a tape of that and then you slowed it down, the reverberation of the courtyard was one of the, because you slowed it down so it seemed to have a much longer reverb time, it was just one of the most beautiful reverbs I've ever heard. And, of course, it wasn't digital at all.
Hey. Lots of good stuff isn't. So.
What do we have queued up?
I'm getting nostalgic. I'm just thinking about old tapes and loops and things. You know, none of which are digital. I guess it's good to use whatever you can.
Doesn't matter what the technology is or the lack thereof.
That's right. And it doesn't hurt to have the technology either. Like where would we be without it too? It's fun having it all, you know?
It's nice not to have to depend
choice.
On it.
Well, yeah, it's nice to have any choice.
We haven't played any acoustic music in this program, have we?
Should we?
Not right now. Not right now. It would be wrong.
Where are we heading now?
I think the only thing that's queued up is Coalcat, right?
Oh, we've got...
That's something I queued up.
Okay, that's whatever you queued up.
And we've got one of the CDs here.
Oh, we got... Slow, we have
slow fade up.
Oh, yeah, right.
Oh, Edge of Sleep. That.
Okay.
Okay, why don't you intro that?
Okay, this is a collaboration that I did with Ned Rothenberg, this multi-woodwind performer, shakuhachi, and bass clarinet. And this was a really elaborate project that started... It started in 1986, and it took us till around 1990 to finish it. And it started out as actually a tape composition for Margaret Jenkins Dance Company, and we liked the material so much that we decided we'd take the basic ideas for the material and make a record out of it. And we didn't like the first version of it, and it went through a lot of phases, and we ended up with a CD called Opposites Attract. And I guess we didn't have anything at the time. We didn't know that there was, actually in the midst of the project happening, when we already had the title, what was it? I think Paula Abdul came out with a 45 called Opposites Attract.
Yeah, that smashed sales of your CD too, as I recall.
Well, nobody sued us, and so so it was it all came out okay in the end, and so this is a couple of excerpts from that project. It involves the piece that I'd like to play first is we used a lot of different musicians in the studio project. Sam Bennett on percussion, Mark Dresser on bass, Anthony Jackson on electric bass, who I've just found out was the bassist. You know that tune by the OJ's Money?
Yeah.
He did the bass line for that. And he wrote that bass line.
Wow.
I didn't even know that when I was recording with this guy. Anyway, and Bobby Previtt, who's a fabulous drummer, and Gene Refkin, who's the drummer I work with, I've been working with for something like 25 years now. This is a piece called The Edge of Sleep, and the real focus of this is an incredible solo by bassist Mark Dresser.
Hi, you're on KPFA.
Hi.
Hi.
I'm calling to say that the show is really great, and I'm getting exposed to all sorts of music that I would never otherwise hear it.
Good.
Oh, you know, past midnight, I just wanted to thank Jay for that wonderful piece called Lightfall.
Oh, thank you.
Totally on the money. Just a great combination of sounds that I would not put together, especially rhythmically. It was way happening.
Great. Glad you liked it.
Thanks.
This is, you know, what I normally do when I edit scores at 1 in the morning.
Can you edit scores and listen to music at the same time?
Yeah.
Wow. I'm impressed.
You're editing what kind of scores?
I have a choral big band, and we do a half dozen different styles of music, and so it's just, you know, editing a set of string parts, and there came this great music.
Oh, that's great.
I could just kind of split myself in two.
Uh-huh. I do it all the time.
I could definitely believe that.
Thanks for calling.
Bye, Michael.
Thank you. Bye now.
Bye-bye. That as a springboard into just regurgitation in
what
general.
What was the dance piece you were talking about earlier where you said it was really radical because it was actually regurgitation? During which music was it?
I wouldn't have brought the subject up. Jay brought that up. But it
no, you brought it up, Paul. Oh. Don't blame it on him.
Well, I played the music. You know.
Oh, I see a dynamic.
I've never done any dynamic pieces going on.
Like blame Jay. Mm-hmm. Like Paul's totally perverse and he could blame Jay about it, eh?
Well, it was quite a stunning moment on stage. It really was.
So what was it?
Well, it was in the piece Age of Unrest at the very end of it. The piece ends with two dancers on stage. Jim Ahrens and Ellie Klopp, and both extraordinary dancers in the Margaret Jenkins Dance Company. Jim is no longer dancing. He's an incredible ceramicist, actually. But in any case, at the end of the piece, Ellie is on the floor, facing up. Her flexibility in her spine is extraordinary, and she has an arch that's sort of like some large bridge. And Jim leaves the stage briefly and comes back, and he has a mouthful of water, and he bends over her and he releases the water into her open mouth, and then this it fits with the dynamic
that
of the whole piece.
That is radical.
It shocks people.
It's a shocking image, even though there's nothing.
Yeah, it is. Bodily fluids.
Yeah.
That exchange is.
Yeah.
And it's done for real, and it's shocking.
That's
but it's also
stunning.
In line with the. With the very sort of disturbing sort of sexual dynamic that pervades the whole piece, and that kind of sort of is the culmination of it.
So this is wonderful. This is a wonderful piece. This is just kind of ambient. I mean, what?
Well, this is the piece that we did live on the radio
years
ago, which it's basically four auto reverse cassette decks. With
so is this a recording of what we did on the radio?
I think probably around that same time I just ran a tape, you know, let the machine run for an hour and a half and ran data of it.
I think we did that for four consecutive hours.
Yeah,
actually.
It can run, it never
so
repeats
cool.
itself, it just yeah. goes, sometimes it's absolutely silent and sometimes it'll be dense and lush. And often the sounds that are on the tape are selected from, there may be like the raw tracks of compositions I might have been working on at the time. This was something that was done sort of mid-1980s through late-1980s. It was a piece called Free Sound. It actually was done as an installation for this wonderful patron of the arts named Betty Freeman,
who lives
in Los Angeles. And she commissioned...
Played gamelan in her house.
Yeah.
With Lou Harrison.
Yeah, right. And she had this extraordinary history of supporting... she supported Harry Parch for a number of years, and she very early on
Cage and Lou Harrison.
Yeah. She supported Phil Glass and Robert Wilson before they were well known, and and she commissioned this for, as an installation in her house.
I was playing gamelan in her living room with the Lou Harrison Ensemble, early 80s. And I was playing along, and then there was a foot right near where I was sitting on the floor. And I looked up, and it was Steve Wright. And I immediately got so flustered, I made, a huge boo-boo. But it was really fun having all these composers clustered around us. Earl Brown, everybody was there.
We should do these salons every, maybe once a month, there'd be a salon there.
It was fabulous. Was she the one that has the Klaus Oldenburg eraser in her backyard and the big Hockney painting of her? Mm-hmm. She's L.A.
Her by her pool.
L.A. housewife. Yeah. It's fabulous.
Yeah, her house is sort of a museum of contemporary art.
So let's maybe take one more call. If 510-848-4425, and then we'll I think we'll move along. What do you have coming up?
Okay, the PD version.
Yeah. Apparently we have queued up to play next a piece by Jay called Cold Cat Crush, which was a title I think came from graffiti on your side of your house one day.
Yeah, somebody sprayed it on the side of my house when we lived right on MacArthur Boulevard in Fruitvale, so I figured that was a sign, and it's really hard to think of titles, so...
Cold Cat.
Just Cold.
No, Cold, K-O-L-E, Cat, K-A-T, Crush, K-R-U-S-H. Don't ask me. I have no idea.
Wow, that's great. So where is this right now?
It's on the bottom DAP player, I think.
Okay,
we'll find out.
Let's take one more call, and then we'll move on to that. Hi, you're on KPFA.
Oh, I'm calling in with a confession.
Uh-oh.
Nice, dude.
What?
I sprayed that on your wall, Jay.
Ah! Oh, how much do I owe you then?
Yeah, really? What, do you want some royalties now,
yeah,
I guess?
They should be pouring in.
Yeah, well, I'll send you a check for 10% of everything I made from that piece tomorrow. Yeah. No, maybe I better not do that. I actually did make some money on that piece.
Because the Kronos Quartet commissioned that, didn't they?
Yeah, they did. So.
I wish I could tell you what it meant, but I have to tell you all.
I'm not ready to know yet.
All right. Well, I mean, if Jim calls in, I have to call in too, I suppose.
Oh, actually.
It's a ritual now.
You could both call in and talk to each other on the air.
You know, I was actually asking if you could put him
on.
Yeah,
you can.
That'd be nice. Jim, if you're... we could talk out the rest of the show.
I'm sure you could. But, yeah.
Okay, well... I'll say goodnight to America then.
Okay. Good night, Steve.
Good night, Steve.
Okay, Cold Cat Crush. If it's on our
Cold Cat Crush.
We're like concentric containers. She said to me once.
Ben.
Hi.
Hi.
I'm calling to say that the show is really great, and I'm getting exposed to all sorts of music that I would never otherwise hear at...
Good.
Oh, past midnight. I just wanted to thank Jay for that wonderful piece called Lightfall.
Oh, thank you.
Totally on the money. Just a great combination of sounds that I would not put together, especially rhythmically. It was way happening.
Great. Glad you liked it.
Thanks.
This is, what I normally do when I edit scores at 1 in the morning.
Can you edit scores and listen to music at the same time?
Yeah.
Wow. I'm impressed.
You're editing what kind of scores?
I have a choral big band. And we do a half dozen different styles of music, and